Hey gamers, this is Liz Davidson from Beyond Solitaire, and this week I bring you a very special guest, Sebastian Bay, adjunct professor at Georgetown Center for Security Studies, general wargame expert, and also a teacher of a wargame class at the Naval Academy. How are you doing today, Sebastian?
I'm great. Thank you.
Do you want to give us a brief rundown of your work as a wargame teacher?
So I am an adjunct professor at Georgetown, where I teach a course called Basics of Wargaming. It is in the graduate program, so most of my students are graduate level, but I do get some five-year undergraduates. So essentially, this course is structured a little blend of lecture and hands-on projects. So in the very first beginning part of the course, the students are broken up into groups of two or three students each, and then they select a case study from a list I provide them. The list is essentially a combination of ancient warfare all the way to modern warfare. And it is specifically designed to cross domains, but also widen the students' military history aperture and their strategic thinking. So beyond the sort of like American-centric, you know, greatest hits, right? So after that, the students are engaged in a couple weeks of lecture where I teach them the basic functions and principles of game design, like how do you do good research? How do you create a scenario? How do you do historical storytelling? How do I create game mechanics and a game system or a combat engine, right? And then we go into later weeks, we go into war game analysis, which the course briefly touches upon, but mainly focuses on creating educational war games at the end. So the students by the end complete three components for their final project, which is a completed set of war games or war game, and then a rule book, and then what we call a designer's journal, which is essentially a chronological or thematic chronicling of all the choices they made, what research sources did they value over others, where they got their sources, why they made certain mechanics the way they did in their game. They can defend some historical inaccuracies in the games or gaps in the historical record they had to contend with. But it's more the fact that if anyone like yourself or hobbyist picks up the game or instructor, you can understand why the game works the way it does. And the designers essentially defend their choices.
That sounds amazing. And I really wish I could take this class. But I have a question for you, which is, are all of your students experienced in gaming when they start your course, or do you have people who are coming in at zero and just thought this sounded cool?
So actually, the majority of my students start with zero. And I mean zero as in not just like zero in the sense of they don't understand what professional wargaming is about, as in like they're not even hobby gamers. So it can be pretty, that's why the course is named Basics of Wargaming. It is built on the assumption that none of the students have any notion of what a war game does or if they have any hobby experience, right? So we start them at like step zero, right? So we build them up of how can games teach, how do games work? And we play some very basic games like Axis and Allies or Game of Thrones Risk or Frederick to just get them, you know what I mean, situated. And then if they are more experienced hobby gamers or war gamers, that I did have one or two of them in the past, then we can play other bigger games to sort of expand their aperture. But often the very beginning for my course is really just having them understand like, what is a game mechanic? How do things move, right? Like, on the lecture on the game system and game mechanics, like I have to tell them all the different ways of how you can use cards, right? Can you use cards at dice? What is the different types of randomness, input versus output, right? What are the different systems for map design, like hexes versus grids versus zones versus point to point, right? Like I assume no knowledge from my students because, you know what I mean, you can't expect that one student will come in with like, you know, 10 years or 20 years of hobby gaming and another will come with zero. So you always assume zero.
What are some of your favorite starter games for teaching and why? What works really well for students that you're trying to get from zero to designing a game over the course of what is a semester?
Yeah, so it's over a semester, and it is so I will always warn people, I'm like, my class is no joke. Like, it is hard. Like, it is a difficult course, mainly because it's a lot of group work. It is like, imagine being told, like, hey, you're going to learn how to design war games from scratch, and you know nothing about games, and you're going to do it in like 14 weeks, right? 15 counting like finals week, right? So like, that is like no joke, from research to finished product, right? Or at least a finished prototype. So it is a difficult course. As for, you know, I mean, the types of games I like to use, I actually mentioned most a couple of the three that I choose to play with my students for the first time. And it depends on the temperature of the room and the skill level of my students, and sometimes interest of their games. So like, I will try to cater games that will be helpful to their own case studies, right? So if you're doing, if like, for example, my first cohort, a lot of them chose Ancient Warfare, right? So I chose games that are more relevant to their, you know, case studies, right? So like, we played Command and Colors, right? And that was really useful to a lot of them, right? And you know, I mean, if they tend to go in towards the more modern or post World War II, we'll play something like Axis and Allies, right? Or a simpler version of it, of those types of games. So that's your. So if I had to choose, I would probably say I would use Game of Thrones, Risk, Frederick, and Axis and Allies 1942 as like my three starter games in the first early weeks of my course, mainly because they, as a combination, provide a good intro to basic mechanics, different functions. Like, for example, Axis and Allies is a simple zone game, right? But it's also a very simple example of different units having different combat values and different movement values, right? And then Frederick is a blended system of a point-to-point, but also uses zones for combat. And it's also a diceless game. So it's a very simple diceless game as well, and has a very easy logistical mechanic. And Game of Thrones is a perfect example of one great chrome and fluff in terms of like dressing up a really, you know what I mean, age-old system of Risk in new clothes and making it interesting. And they add, and Game of Thrones Risk is a great example for beginning designers to understand you can create complexity by layering simple mechanics on top of each other, right? Or you know, I mean, you can take a different approach of having like really complex singular mechanics that, you know, I mean, are one or two in your system. But Game of Thrones Risk is really a layer system of like, there's a very basic Risk engine underneath of everything, but they layer cards and they layer victory conditions, and they make it more interesting by adding little bits of it. So those are usually the three games I choose.
Interesting. You also mentioned that you have a list of case studies for your students to choose from when it comes to, you know, themes for war games that they're going to create. What kinds of themes go on your list? What kind of case studies? And what is the reasoning behind the choices you make? Why do you, what limits are you working within?
So rule number one is no civil war, or I mean, no American Civil War, mainly because that's just a personal bias of mine. More seriously is that the students in my grad program at Georgetown already are required to take what they are called 501, which is their military strategy and history sort of course, which is mandatory for all the students in our program. And that goes over, you know what I mean, the highlights of American, you know what I mean, military history, like Vietnam, World War II, World War I, the Civil War. So I essentially mostly avoid those. Because one of the things I wanted to do purposefully in my course is have the students' historical aperture be widened beyond our American-centric view of history, particularly military history, and then also span time periods and geography and areas and regions that they normally don't touch upon in their normal history, I mean, education, whether it be in high school, college, or in grad school, right? So for instance, in one of the case studies is from 1463 to 1718, I think, is the Ottoman-Venetian Wars, right? Which is something you normally don't study on a European history like buff, right? So that is a case study on there, right? Or the Imjin Wars between Japan and Korea and China in the 16th century, in the late 1590s, right? Or you do something like sort of, you know, more contemporary, like the Falklands War, or, you know what I mean, Operation Tilla when the Turkish invaded Cyprus, right? Or the Tamil Tigers in Sri Lanka, or the Seko-Congo War in the late 1990s and early 2000s. And the whole point is to open your aperture, right? So your examples of counterinsurgency are just not Vietnam and Afghanistan, right? That you can open your aperture across time periods, right? And you understand that, you know what I mean, hybrid warfare of blending the political tools and proxy forces is not a new thing, right? It is an old thing that's happened in the past before, right? And we also include other domains like naval warfare and stuff like, and there are some things that, you know what I mean, are probably predictable. Like I had the Battle of Jutland on there, right? Mainly because, you know what I mean, it's one of the few like battleship to battleship dreadnought era like engagements in naval history. And of course, as a Marine, I include the Second Barbary Wars, right, and some of the Pacific Campaign in World War II. But I tried to make it interesting, and I add and remove things every year and every semester. And it depends on the course that I'm working on. For example, my Georgetown course tends to be more diverse in the sense of I do land, air, and maritime case studies. For my upcoming course at the U.S. Naval Academy, we have a larger focus on amphibious operations and naval history, given the focus of the Naval Academy, unsurprisingly.
That makes a lot of sense. So I have a question, which is what level of complexity do you expect from your students who are novice war game designers? I mean, what kinds of games are they designing by the end of the course? What's a glimpse into what a finished product might look like?
So honestly, I had no idea what to expect when I first started teaching this course. I wasn't sure if the students, one, could finish a prototype in such a short amount of time. I didn't know if it was too much or if their games would be too simple. And honestly, I have been overwhelmingly surprised every semester I've taught this by the complexity and the research and the amount of effort these students put into their games. So, for example, one of the games is about the Three Kingdoms called Heroes Rising. And the game is game mechanics themselves in sort of segments are not overly complicated. Like, for instance, the combat engine is largely Risk, right? You know what I mean, three dice for the attacker, two dice for the defender, ties go to the defender, largely, right? But they add and they but they interestingly mash these different things. Like, for instance, they had a really interesting peasant rebellion aspect, right, that added a certain dimension to their game that was really great. They use a point-to-point system, but they, like Frederick, right, the game they played, but they added a spin to it where they colored the nodes different colors. So they represented mountains, plains, and forests. And they have, unlike Risk, right, where all your units are generic, they had different units. They have archers, they had cavalry, and they had infantry. So each of those guys got different bonuses to their combat engine depending on what node you were fighting in, right? They also had this great sort of zone of control through the node system, where you had to create provincial like strongholds on your map to sort of control a province of China. So you see, like, the mechanics themselves separately are not particularly like innovative or like groundbreaking, but they combine them in such an interesting way to meet the design's needs of their game. And I think that was the really impressive part. And I can talk about a bunch of other games that my students have created, but that's one that comes to mind.
Does that mean that the games that you show them at the beginning of the class really do impact the mechanics that they choose for their own games? I noticed that you referred back to both Risk and Frederick, which you also said were games that you like to start them on. Do you see different impacts depending on what starter games you use on the final products?
So actually, that's something I learned after the first time I taught this course, right? Because at the time, you know, the Georgetown University War Gaming Society, GOOSE, wasn't around yet. It was established in the spring after my first fall semester. And one thing I realized when I was grading the final games of that first cohort was, oh my God, their games are too much like my tastes. It was like really flattering because they took a lot of my own style into their style, right? But then I was also equally horrified as an educator because I'm like, oh God, what if I just make
a pipeline of just mini-me's, right? And I didn't want that. So for the following semester, this semester, I made specific changes to avoid that. So there is sort of unavoidable that they whatever game we do play will affect them. And I still try to cater those intro games to fit the model or game design they may have to sort of overcome in their own game designs and their case studies. But I also, for instance, this time they have these two oral presentations where they do these sort of design briefs of like, this is where our game is, and this is sort of the mechanics we're doing, and these are some of the rules. I make sure, especially in the virtual environment, to bring in other designers. So like this year we had Volker Rohinke, and we had Michael Dunn from Command and General Staff College out of Army University come and serve as sort of guests, like, you know, reviewers. So they are able to offer like different perspectives of like, how, what about this? Or have you thought about using cards this way? So they got different perspectives of a designer beyond just my own, right? So that was one change. Another change was that because Goose has grown its gaming collection beyond the collection of my own personal collection, I am able to give out games that even I haven't played, right? So we get lots of donations. And that's, you know what I mean, reflective of the generosity of the gaming community and a lot of publishers who support us. And I'm able to give them games of like, hey, I've never played this game, but this sort of aligns with your case study. What about your group, like, opens it up and, you know, sees if there's anything. So that's one way I've, those are two principal ways that I've been able to avoid that first, cloning process in my first cohort. But it's definitely been a learning experience as I go.
So you teach at Georgetown and also at the Naval Academy. Are there any differences in tone or goal or aim of those courses, or are they relatively similar?
So there are some obvious differences, but before I start that, I will caveat that I haven't started teaching at the Naval Academy yet. My first class starts in January, which I'm very excited about. But we have done, and I mean we as in Dr. Marcus Jones and Dr. Claude Baroub out of the U.S. Naval Academy. They are my cohorts and my colleagues and my co-conspirators in the U.S. Naval History Wargaming Lab that we've constructed and where my course is sort of seated under at the Academy. And we have done a couple events already on the yard to sort of gin up interest in the course. But the course hasn't started yet. But one of the big differences is that my grad program at Georgetown are all graduate students mostly, or fifth year sort of special grad / undergrad students. And they usually have a blend of professional experience, but also military experience. And they usually have some kind of like work life balance. Meanwhile, my midshipmen are all mostly, at least, young, you know, undergrad students, and their life experience are a little more limited. And also, this because of the naval focus of the academy, unsurprisingly, they're all naval officers, right, or soon to be. Our case studies are different, right? So there is a more emphasis on naval warfare and naval history, and that's, you know, good for them. And it's very exciting because, you know, I'll get more naval games out of these guys. But it's also very interesting because they're also now, unlike my grad students who come from all different backgrounds, whether they be analysts, researchers, or military officers, all of my midshipmen will become naval officers, whether in the Marine Corps or in the Navy. And they will bring this game out into the fleet, which is a really exciting portion of their of this sort of course. But also more importantly is that we have tailored the course also more specifically to hit on themes that are more relevant to their naval thinking as officers, right? Like, how do you think about long-range precision fires or the role of aviation, right? Looking backwards, right, at different examples of technology, right? Like, for example, one of the case studies that is on the list for the U.S. Naval Academy is the Russo-Japanese War, right? Because there's a very interesting dimension of logistics and alliances and technology about the dreadnought era, and also perceptions of a European power fighting an Asian power for the first time, right? So there's lots of interesting things we explore at different ways at both at Georgetown and at the Naval Academy.
I want to take that class too, I'm not going to lie. So a question. I think that a lot of people who want to study a historical topic in depth always wonder why war games are helpful. And I especially have that question myself about, you know, teaching a security studies program. We have so many modern, very scary problems that those students are probably learning to confront. But then you also have the option to do something like Byzantine warfare as a case study. What do you think your class offers that makes it worth it, regardless of case study?
So the first thing is whether you believe conflict and strategy have timeless principles, right? If you think there are timeless principles to strategy and operations and tactics, right, across eras, right, then it doesn't matter if you're looking at a Byzantine reconquest of Rome or if you're looking at naval engagements in the Roman era, right, at Ticum, right, or the Civil War battles or modern, you know, conflict in, you know, the Congo, right? It doesn't matter. There's always something to learn, right? And I am of that school, right? There are certain timeless things that you always learn, like balancing political means, right? Or political goals and military means, right? And the danger of overextending, right? Or hedging your bets. So there's important lessons to be drawn from military history and across history, regardless of technology and geography. But it's also really important to expand your tool set, your reservoir of knowledge. So one of the things that I specifically include in my case studies is to make sure my students are not always going back to the same examples and the same case studies they've always been exposed to as history students and strategic students, right? And to answer your question of what benefit does wargaming have to just the study of strategy and history is, one, if you're the designer, you get to know your topic intimately well, right? Like you get to know the characters, the plot, the dynamics, the controversies, right? The gaps in your history, right? And that in itself is a great tool for you as a researcher, as a scholar, or just as an amateur historian, right? Another great part about having games that look at history and look at strategy is that they're immersive and they internalize the things you know in your brain into your bones, as I tell my students, right? So like, for instance, you may know like, oh, like alliances are important and I shouldn't overextend myself, or, you know what I mean, the importance of logistics, right? And they may all know all this, but let's say when my students and I play Axis and Allies, right? Like it is often this sort of like light bulb moment for them. Like they all have learned and read about, you know, the Second World War ad nauseum, right? They know about the Battle of Atlantic. They know about Operation Torch. They know about Plan Orange, right? The naval campaign against the Japanese, right? But you'll be shocked, right, of how poorly they actually like do those strategies, right? In a simple game like Axis and Allies, right? Like, for instance, this semester, one of my students like was like trying to do Operation Torch, right? But then he like forgot that, you know what I mean, aircraft out of Europe can reach you when you're trying to unload, right, into Africa. So like he like sent like two destroyers and like a crap ton of transports that he spent, you know, a long time building, and I just sunk them, right? Like, and I was like, hey, you know, aviation matters. And he's like, I totally forgot about your planes. So I'm like, yeah, so did the British early on in the war, and you've learned that today, right? So like stuff like that. So there's a difference between like remembering history, being able to recall history, and really knowing it, right? And the next time we played, my students were like, oh, we're not falling for that again, right? They understand it. They remember it in their bones, as I say.
That makes a lot of sense. So I have as an educator, how do you grade work for this course? It seems to me like with group work, with novice game design, a lot could go wrong along this path. So how do you assess the work that students do?
So it's broken up into pieces, the assessment framework. So all my students and the student groups go through the same assignments, in the sense that in the very beginning, they have to do a very simple what we call a study plan. And it's really just like a 1 or 2 page outline. And it's just due in like week 2, where it's just a forcing function. of where, or week three, where the students have to sit down with their groups and be like, okay, I am gone this week, or this is when I'm planning to travel for work, and this is when these assignments are due. And they're just supposed to coordinate and be like, we're going to get all of our research done by the end of October, by Halloween. We're going to do these things, and we're going to play test these dates, right? So it's just for them to start scheduling, right? So they're not doing it on the fly. And that's a simple, like, 5 points of their final grade. And then the next assignment is their scenario memo, which is probably the easiest thing they know how to do, because it's very similar to what they normally do, which is writing a book report sort of thing, right? They do a historical lit review of the sources, and they tell me about their conflict from beginning to end. And at the very end, they sort of scope what part of that conflict they're going to talk about, whether at the strategic level, the tactical level, specific years. Like, for example, if you're going to do the Second World War, are you going to do the Pacific? Are you going to do the whole war? Are you going to do the conflict in the Mediterranean? Are you going to do the Soviet offensive? Like, what part of it? And that's where they scope their game. And the next two are their design presentations. And those are really graded on how far developed your game is. Is it consistent? Is it well-researched, right? Are you doing what you're saying, right? Are you incorporating elements of our class in terms of game design, right? And their final games, which is the largest chunk of their grade, is really about how well does your game teach what it was intended to teach, and how well does it do it, right? So a part of that grading is, is it well-researched? Like, is it grounded in history, grounded in scholarship, right? Grounded in what a good game should be about as a teaching tool, right? And the second part is that, do you teach what you're intended to do, right? Like, if you're teaching me about, you know what I mean, the difficulty of modern day submarine warfare, right? Then your game better show me the dynamics that a true submarine warfare officer on a ship somewhere in the ocean will face, right? The difficulty of finding submarines, right? The difficulty of targeting submarines with even advanced weapons, right? What are the methods in which I can hunt you as a submarine, or vice versa, right? So are you modeling your conflict correctly, right? Or consistently? And the second part is, how well does your design carry that all the way through, right? Are there holes? Are there gaps? Are there inconsistencies, right? Or are there things that I look at your game and just don't believe that you did the research on, right? Or it just creates an aberration in the game that diminishes the educational value, right? So that's usually the framework of how the final grades are assigned. And of course, you know what I mean, students that, you know what I mean, incorporate all elements from chrome to fluff and like small details and on top of a great game system are graded well.
Makes sense. So in addition to teaching a war game class, you also help out with Goose. Do you want to tell people about Goose?
So the Georgetown University Wargaming Society, affably known as Goose, is sort of like an extension of my course at Georgetown. It was established in 2020 in January. So we're about to be 1 year old soon. And it is a student-run extracurricular academy or club at Georgetown, where we focus on getting people familiar with wargaming as a tool, as a hobby, but also introducing them to the professional development side of using wargaming in the national security defense realm. So we do a bunch of different things, from weekly webinars that are recorded for our YouTube channel, that brings speakers from all across the globe, across fields, from the commercial sector. We have Velko Rohinki on there talking twice, actually, talking about cards and his coin designs. We have people who work in DoD. We had Mitch Reed, who is a great hobby gamer, but also a professional war gamer for the U.S. Air Force, talk about the Air Force's Title 10 games, which are their annual big service focused games. And then we have everyone in between, right, talking about all the different interesting things they're doing, from how do you use commercial games at Command and General Staff College at the Army University, right, to teach Army officers game design, right? Or we have some very interesting lectures coming up about whole of government, whole of society gaming, right? And then we have a month of February about naval wargaming, including some And we have Peter Perla, who will be talking about gaming in January as well. So we're really excited about that. But we also do virtual game nights on Steam and Tabletop Simulator. But we also do big events collaborating with our partners like Army War College to do war game events that are like 20 plus people. And then we do, we're also trying to do more mentorships and fellowships for our students who are interested in pursuing wargaming as a career with our partners. Oh, that's my dog. With our partners like Krulak Center and Marine Corps University and other places.
So speaking of mentorship, you and I are part of a project together, the Zenobia Award. Do you want to cover that real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Zenobia Award is the brainchild of Harry Buchanan and Volko Rohinki, and they want to increase the diversity of the war of designers, right, in historical games. And the Zenobia Award is really just aimed at providing mentorship and a path forward for underrepresented groups in our field, which is, I think is amazingly brave and amazingly awesome thing for both those guys to do it. And we are, both of us, very excited and eager and blessed to be part of that process.
So in your experience as somebody who takes people from zero to war game, I feel like this is, you're the right person to ask. Is it possible for anyone out there to design a war game or a historical game if they have the passion for it?
Absolutely, 100%. If you're just asking, like, can I make a great game, right? Then absolutely, anyone can do it. It doesn't require a certain, like, musical talent or anything. It just requires hard work, a lot of dedication, and a willingness to fail often. and take criticism and feedback well. I think those are really all you really need, and time. in terms of if can anyone become a professional wargamer, I would say largely yes as well. But there are some more skills that are required in terms of analytical skills that are required to do research and professional wargaming. But if you're just like, hey, can I make a great game about pick a subject, right? Then yeah, absolutely.
So in other words, those of you out there who are thinking about applying for the Zenobia Award, you should. And as a mentor, Sebastian, what do you think is the most important for supporting new designers and helping them get their project to be a functional living thing?
So as a mentor to many students, one of the things I've learned as a mentor is be understanding and communicative with your mentee. Not all mentees will be the same. Their personalities will different. Their goals will different. Their styles will different. So your job as the mentor is to understand what your mentee needs and where they want to go. And your job is to help them get there. So in that regard, you know, you have to, as a mentor, be on the receiving end in the beginning of trying to understand what your mentee needs from you, whether that be game design or helping them connect with other resources or people or learn a skill. And then your job is to help them guide or help them along their way as they, you know what I mean, run into problems, which they will undoubtedly do so. In a more broad sense, beyond just the Zenobia Award, is one of the things I make sure or at least try to do as much as possible is with young, bright designers in my course or those that I encounter through Goose or other places is to help them publish. Like one of the great things in my own career beyond just wargaming, but as a scholar and as a researcher and as an analyst is to publish and write. So one of the things I always encourage them to do is to publish and write. So like in my course, like if you miss a class, right, then you have to write a gamer review and, you know, get it published somewhere, right? And I encourage them to write up articles on their games and get them published on blogs, get them published on national security and defense publications. The whole point is for them to take this game out forward beyond the class. And even if you're not a full-time war gamer, you can add value if you learn how to write and publish and be mentored and gain sort of, I mean, visibility as a young scholar in our field.
You do a lot of work, but your teaching job is not your day job. What are you allowed to tell us about your day job?
So as my day job is I work for a think tank, and I do a lot of defense work, and most of that involves wargaming.
I'm so jealous, so deeply jealous. And just to round that out, what are you playing for fun right now, if anything?
So right now, the recent obsession is Here to Slay, mainly because it's really easy. And I am in love with like the chrome and fluff of that game. If you've never played it, it's a really easy game. It's card driven. But one of the great things about the cards is that they're really funny. Like Tipsy Tootie is a card, which is like this like bard card, like in the very fantasy archetypes of a bard. And he's just like dragging a big beer mug. And he's like a squirrel or something, or a rabbit. Stuff like that is really interesting, I think. And I use those cards as an example of like humor and good card design for my students to just switch it up from just all war games all the time. But there are other games that I've been playing that I'm finally rekindling my sort of in the video realm, learning Armored Brigade again by Matrix Games. You know, trying to stay edgy with the technology. But also, there are a couple other games that I've gotten in the mail recently that have not had the time yet, which will probably have to wait until after I grade my finals for my students. But Gallipoli by Joe Schmidt, that just arrived in the mail, that I'm uber excited to play. I played a lot of Shores of Tripoli recently by Kevin Bertram at First Circle Games. And there's a couple other games that I'm really excited to play. But haven't even unwrapped them yet.
I know that feeling all too well. Do you also design games? I know that you keep game design ideas, but are any coming to fruition at this time?
In terms of things I can share, there's one project that we just recently started. So one of the things, because I am a glutton for punishment and do not like sleep, often students come to me and they ask me, oh, like, I want to learn how to design, and they're not in my program. So, or they're Marine officers or just officers in general. And they're like, hey, I want to learn about wargaming. How do I design something? And usually the answer is like, read these books, but design a game, right? It's just one of those things you have to learn by doing. So to solve that problem is I create student teams or design teams that are beyond my course, or people from my course that want to keep doing it in Goose, and we create a game, and I essentially serve as their lead designer. So one of the projects that we just recently started, Caitlin Leong, our current president, is my second on it. And we have a Marine officer and an undergraduate student from UPenn on the team. And we're creating a game on the Imjin War. It's a project that I wanted to do for a long time. And one of the great things about it is that I get to apprentice the other members of the team as we're designing this game, and they get hopefully a game publication credit to it at the end. But most of my game designs professionally have been for analytical purposes. But this is probably one of the educational games that we're excited to work on and hopefully publish in the near future.
Fantastic. So I know that you might need to slip a nap in at some point, so I'm going to let you go. But first, where can we find you on the internet if we want to?
So you can find me on Twitter, and I am on, I was shockingly uncreative about my Twitter handle, which is just my name, Sebastian Bay. So I'm pretty easy to find. And yeah, so that's usually the only social media that I really use. So you can find me there. And mostly I tweet about war games and the Patriots, if you're a football fan, and my students. So, if you're, and the Marine Corps. So if you're interested in those things, you can find my Twitter.
The Patriots. You leave me feeling deflated at the end of this interview.
I see what you did there. I see what you did there, wordplay. But you know what I mean? We are six-time Super Bowl champions, and we're not very good this year. So, all good things come to an end. But yeah, so I'm really excited about, seeing the next generation of game designers in the Zenobia Award, but also in my classes. Like, it's one of the best parts of it, right? Is that when you see students that came in knowing nothing, leaving the course with not only a game, right, but with so much excitement for not only the hobby, but also for the tool and for the craft of game design, right? And that is a special thing. It makes all the sleepless nights and late nights working on slides for your students all worth it. And all those Saturday mornings, office hours you have to do to play games with them. So it makes everything worth it.
Thank you so much, Sebastian, for sharing this with us. Listeners, of course, you can find him as at Sebastian Bay. You can find me as Beyond Solitaire anywhere. And we both really appreciate you being here to listen to us. Happy gaming.